We'll call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. It's Tuesday morning, March 12, 2024. Please silence your cell phones. The time is 9:05 a.m. I'm joined today by Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, and Senator Hoffman is away on other state business. I'd like to go ahead and say that we have two bills on the agenda this morning. First is Senate Bill 236 by Senator Keel. Next is Senate Bill 127 by Senator Kleeman. Senate Bill 236 grants to disaster victims by Senator Keel. This is the first hearing. Senator Keel, please go ahead and present the bill and bring us up to speed on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Keel. I have the privilege of serving Senate District B. With me is Ella Adkison of my staff. Senate Bill 236, Mr. Chairman, makes some changes in Alaska's disaster assistance program. These changes kick in for disasters, natural disasters, where we have a disaster declaration from the governor, but we do not have a disaster declaration from the President of the United States. Alaska helps Alaskans even when FEMA doesn't show up. That's what this bill is about. The bill makes two changes. The first is the amount of aid. Current law sets the state disaster assistance at half of the maximum FEMA pays. That inflation adjusts with time. Right now, it's about $21,000. Mr. Chairman, as every member at this table knows, when a natural disaster takes out your home, takes out your livelihood, knocks you on your back, $21,000 doesn't even get you back to your knees. The bill moves that up to $50,000. And then in time, when the FEMA program inflation adjustment gradually raises above that level, this would adjust with that. It pays the greater of. The other change it makes is to close a loophole that I think probably was unintended when the program was created. Our state program will help you out with damage to your home that insurance does not cover. But the way it's written, if you own a condo and the condo foundation is undercut or the roof caves in or a wall is broken, you own your condo from the paint in, as they say. The damage, even though your condo association duns you personally for your share of the fix, you can't use the state disaster assistance program to pay that. This fixes that problem. There's no double dipping, but it makes a condo owner eligible for that state aid to help with the damage to the structure they live in on the same terms as a single family homeowner. Mr. Chairman, those are the changes the bill makes. I think they're important updates to a program of Alaska helping Alaskans when a disaster strikes. I have my staff here. The bill is very short, but she can provide a sectional analysis. I'm also happy to take questions, and we have some invited testifiers. Thank you.
Before we do that, we'll have questions of the bill sponsored by members of the committee. Do we have any questions for the bill sponsor? If not, Ms. Atkinson, go ahead with your sectional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ella Atkinson, staff to Senator Keel. Section 1 repeals and reenacts an existing section and statute without substantive changes, so the format is consistent with later sections. And Section 2 increases the maximum amount of state aid to the greater of $50,000 or half the federal maximum. It also allows a grantee who is a member of a condo association to use state aid to pay for their share of condo-wide damage expenses. Thank you.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning. Senator Keel, does this bill have an effective date, or when would it be taken to effect?
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's no specific effective date clause. The bill thus would take effect 90 days after the governor signs it or it becomes law without signature.
Senator Wilson, follow up.
And just with that, so would any of the past disaster victims that we've heard about in the news around the state be eligible for this if it passes?
Mr. Chairman, no, I do not have a retroactivity clause in here. As folks struggle to recover, it would be difficult to know just how far back to reach, and that's a price tag question, and so I made the bill prospective.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Keel. Any other questions for the bill sponsored by members of the committee? If not, we'll go to invited testimony. The first up is Wade Bryson, City and Borough of Juneau Assembly. Come on, please come on up and identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Wade Bryson. I'm an assembly member in Juneau. I'm a 29-year resident of Juneau. I'm a small business owner by trade. I want to share with my experience with you as I've been a river rafter on the Menhall River. As we had a disaster on August 6th of 2023, and what my experience from seeing the river, but also as a politician. We had a glacial outburst flood at a level of water that was 180% higher than the previous high water mark. Just unprecedented amount of water coming down the valley. We saw it that morning, and we didn't think that too much of it, and as it just kept growing, then we started to hear of the disasters that were happening. Following the disaster, myself, Senator Murkowski, and city staff members took fire department river rescue boats up the river to see it. There were boulders the sizes of cars and buses that used to be in the river that had gotten moved and now were parked under the river. The amount of power that was released was unseen. But then the neighborhood meetings began and the citizens started reaching out to us. And disaster, when it strikes and you don't know how to respond, creates a level of panic. And it wasn't just one family affected, it was neighborhoods that were affected. And so standing there talking to the citizens that have lost their home and their main component of wealth, their life savings. The average person, their largest wealth asset is their home. And when that is jeopardized, threatened, or destroyed, or lost, the level of uncertainty that overwhelms a family makes the situation that much worse. The consequences of keeping the level of funding at $21,000 as opposed to moving it to the $50,000 could be the difference of people being able to start over here in Alaska or have to move down south or move in with family or find other resources to be able to continue building their lives back after they've lost everything. One of the families that I spoke with, they were well into their retirement. They had Airbnb'd outside of their home. They had a nice little thing going, and all of their wealth, their whole life was tied up in a house that is now gone. While $50,000 is not going to make that family whole, it's going to be a huge step in creating some surety and helping the citizens of every community in Alaska. None of us are immune to disasters, and I would hope that every politician does not have to go through what I did at that neighborhood meeting where I said, the only promise I can make you is that I can't promise you anything. That's it. It was that uncertain. And then we learned all of the different things that were available. Juneau supports SB 236, as we know that it'll help all of our friends and neighbors and families in their worst time of need. I thank you. It is an honor to come in. This is my very first time testifying for the Senate, so I'm very excited. Thank you very much for the time.
Mr. Bryson, thank you very much for coming out this morning. Do we have any questions of the Assemblyman by members of the committee? One of the questions I do have is that as you look at taxpayer money from to fund the disaster, how does that, and this is obviously paid by people that aren't even from this area, how do you justify that to them when they said, you know, and like my district, it's 1,500 miles away. Why should I be paying for the flood that's down there with this? I mean, and it was impressive that some of the footage that went on TV, that this big colossal building, if somebody can afford that, why do I have to pay for it or help pay for it when I live in a shack up there in Shishmaref or out on Diomede?
I think because of just the nature of living in Alaska, if your district was or another district was hit by an earthquake, and maybe only a small section of the community was damaged, or only maybe one or two of the buildings in the community was damaged, it's times like that FEMA does not step in when the amount of damage to a community is what they don't deem catastrophic enough. So this would enable any community that had a small disaster that didn't qualify for federal funds where they would hopefully the state would be able to help every citizen. This applies to homeowners, condos owners that are productive members of the society. Every member that we help get back on their feet is that much sooner that they'll become return to being a productive member of society instead of trying to figure out where they're going to live. Can they afford to stay here? We don't want anyone to leave our communities because of a disaster and our inability to be able to provide assistance.
I think that the answer is better put that we're not, like you pointed out, that disasters, nobody's immune from them. We just went through the Murbach police fire in Golub, and we had 4 feet of sand inside of our new house that we just built. And so help came in for that. Thank God we were able to rescue and save whatever we could. So,
Mr. Chair, can I include when we had a landslide in one of our neighboring southeast communities? Every community stepped up and tried to provide some level of aid. And I think that increasing the level from 20 to 50,000, that Alaskans would appreciate that. That is their way of making sure that any community that is impacted by disaster, the appropriate level of aid is available.
Very well put. That's the Alaska way. Any further questions by Mr. Bryson, by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next up, we have Sylvia Hines, the Team Rubicon in Haines. She's on the online. Is she on, ma'am?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
For the record, my name is Sylvia Hines. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I worked for 3 years as disaster reconstruction project manager for Chilkoot Indian Association. I've worked as the coordinator for the Haines Long-Term Recovery Group and deputy administrator for Alaska's Team Rubicon, a veterans-based disaster response organization. And in that time, I've been involved in the recovery efforts of over 200 disaster-affected households across Alaska. And I've seen firsthand the phenomenal job of the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management's Individual Assistance Program. When I respond to hurricanes in the lower 48 or attend disaster conferences, I am so proud to be an Alaskan because we have one of the best programs in the country. So I encourage you to support SB 236 for four main reasons. Number one, disasters are increasing in frequency and intensity, and at this point, it's not if a disaster hits a community in Alaska or affects you personally, it's when. And as you were just discussing, Alaskans help each other. So when my community of Haines was hit, we had 34% of our community reported damage. Everyone came from all over to assist. Alaskans paid for their tax dollars for us to get that individual assistance funding. And then again, when Murbach hit, I was able to go up to respond to that typhoon, and we were assisting them. So we all have to help each other. When a disaster hits, it really wrecks an economy, and that funding is vital. Number two, the current funding is not enough. When Haines was affected by that federally declared disaster in 2020, out of the 240 households that reported damage, insurance only covered one of those households because ground movement negated the ability for Alaskans to qualify insurance. But over and over again, our Alaskans are underinsured or just not able to get insurance assistance, and that state funding, even though $50,000 certainly doesn't make you whole or replace your home, it provides funding to help Alaskans kind of help themselves get that initial boost. Number three, this bill is really good for the Alaskan economy because besides addressing housing needs, which are vital for getting disaster-affected Alaskans back to work, I've seen so much of that distributed funding go directly to local contractors, to hardware stores, to locals. So disasters really just destroy community economies. And that funding is vital for whole community recovery. Again, so that community, like Haines, can then assist when disasters hit. Juneau or communities in Western Alaska with Murbach. And the last reason that I think is one of the best reasons is trust. I've been so impressed with the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and I personally fully trust that department to manage this funding. They are so thorough in making sure every dollar is not duplicated and is distributed appropriately. Every single dollar that is spent has to be, people on the ground are confirming that that funding is appropriate, that it is for disaster-affected residents. There's so many rules that stipulate who gets that funding and why. So we can fully trust that these dollars are not being duplicated and they are going to the people who really need them most. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions of Ms. Hines by members of the committee? Thank you very much for coming out this morning, and thank you for all the efforts that Team Rubicon does throughout the state.
Thank you.
Our next invited testimony is Steve Bradford from the Riverside Condo Association. He's a board member that's there. Mr. Bradford, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the Senate Finance Committee this morning in favor of Senate Bill 236. As you stated, I am the vice president of the Riverside Condo Association. And in that position, the condo board had to make some significant decisions this year regarding repairs to our condo association, which are about $1.1 million. These repairs had to be borne by the condo unit owners, as state law does not currently allow financial grants to condo owners, only homes of single-family only owners of single-family residences. So the assessment to each owner in our condo association was about $21,000 for 48 units and almost $27,000 for three larger units. In addition to that, a number of our owners had interior damages, as Senator Keel stated earlier. The condo association owners responsible for paint in, so we had a lot of cracked sheetrock, flooring damage, things like that, because one of our buildings, Building D, which you probably saw in the news, lost its foundation. We had about 100 yards of undermining, erosion under the building itself, and the building actually was sort of hanging by its fingernails, if you will, from toppling into the river. And fortunately, because we had such cooperation from city and federal officials as terms of permits, contractors helped us get right in there. We were able to save the building from a total loss. So that was just amazing in itself. Took 4 days to get a beam under it and basically save the building from total collapse. So suffice it to say, the Riverside condo owners wholeheartedly support Senate Bill 236, thereby placing condo owners on the same emergency benefit eligibility level as single-family homeowners in Alaska. The $50,000 level would be just super. I mean, we had some owners that practically had to give up their condo because, you know, we have some owners that are young families, that were new owners that barely could afford to get into their condos, and bang, all of a sudden they're hit with a $20,000+ bill. So, and no aid, no state aid for those folks. So we wholeheartedly support the effort Senator Keel and his staff are making to try to alleviate that. And I'm happy to take any questions at this point. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much for coming out this morning, Mr. Bradford. Any members of the committee have questions for the Riverside Condo Association Board Vice President?
Mr. Chair, I have a question for the bill sponsor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. And through the chair to Senator Keel, two questions. First, can you give me the definition of condo and what structures that will include? And also, Ms. Hines mentioned homeowners insurance. Can you tell me the intersection between homeowners insurance and the disaster aid provided in your bill?
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, you'll see the very last line of the bill has a cross-reference to the definitions of unit owners and units and the unit for unit owner association. So we use an existing statutory definition for those condo buildings and condo owners, and I can provide a copy of that statute to the committee. The intersection with insurance, I think, is a really valuable thing to think about. So many of these disasters involve things that you can't get insurance to cover. If the earth moves under your foundation, homeowners insurance just doesn't touch that. Whether the earth has moved down the mountainside and crushed your home in a landslide, or whether the river has taken the earth out from under your concrete, homeowners insurance doesn't cover movement of the earth. So there are, of course, many other disasters involved, but we talked with the Division of Insurance about this bill. We wanted to be careful that we weren't creating some unintended incentive for Alaskans to go reduce their insurance or anything, and that the overwhelming response, is not a quote, Mr. Chairman, the overwhelming response was $50,000. Are you kidding me? So we are confident that this will not harm people's desire or need to get homeowners insurance. So many of these disasters, you just can't insure against.
Thank you, Chair Wilson.
Mayor?
Nope. Thank you, Chair.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. Will this bill cover, I guess, additional folks that's not their primary residence or only their primary residence? Or if I had 10 condos in a building that was destroyed, I would get 10 times the amount?
Mr. Chairman, I think for that specific question, we have some of the staff from the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, the people that Ms. Hines spoke so well about, and I believe they could give us a more precise answer.
Mr. Brian Fisher from the Director of the Homeland Security and Emergencies Management, Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Are you on, sir?
I'm here, Mr. Chairman. I'm in person.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were in the room. Do you remember the question?
I do. For the record, Brian Fisher, Director of the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and live in District L for the last 37 years. Through the chair, to your question, the answer is no. Our regulations in 6AAC 94-200-290 specify other factors of eligibility that it has to be your primary owner-occupied residence. So we don't do secondary homes, or in this case, we wouldn't cover additional units that were not a primary residence.
Thank you. Senator Wilson.
No, thank you.
I got a question for the bill sponsor, and that has to do with what about if there's a fire that wipes out somebody's home? What happened? Are they eligible for this $50,000 increase?
Mr. Chairman, subject to being corrected by Mr. Fisher, as long as the fire is declared a disaster by the governor,
okay.
Yes, that would be eligible for this program.
And if it's not their primary residence?
Mr. Chairman, I'm quite sure that this is limited to primary residences.
Mr. Fisher, you agree?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Brian Fisher, for the record, primary residences, and they have to be owner-occupied at the time.
Owner-occupied. Okay. No, thank you very much for coming out. And Mr. Bradford, thank you very much for speaking this morning. We'd like to go ahead I'm sorry, Senator Stedman.
Yeah, thank you. I think maybe the committee should think about this definition a little bit, because there's a lot of homes that, for instance, you may buy your parents' home, or you may be helping your children purchase a house. So it wouldn't technically be your primary residence. And if it's damaged, it's still a significant issue. So we might want to look at trying to consider broadening that definition somewhat.
Can I comment on that, Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm happy to talk with the senator and with the division about how that would look.
Sure. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Along the same line of questioning, you piqued my interest when you said occupied, because I have constituents that will live in town for a period of time, but then go back to the village and do their whole summer subsistence, fall subsistence lifestyle, and are occupying their second residence, if you will. And if they're under this, what you said about occupied, if they're there and it's occupied during a forest fire, is it covered or not?
Senator Keel. Mr. Fisher.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the definition in the administrative code, it 694 AAC 290 specifies that. I believe it says you have to live in the home for at least 6 months of the year. So if it's any more than 6 months, that would be considered your primary residence. And that's how the definitions are in regulation right now.
Follow up, Senator Bishop.
No, but I'm thinking, I think like the co-chair from Sitka is thinking.
Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee? Either Mr. Fisher or the bill sponsor or his aide. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to, I think I asked this question to the bill sponsor, but the department's here at the table and asked this question about the second to last paragraph in the fiscal note talks about the proposed new structure creates additional complex decision points, making it difficult to calculate the exact impact it would have on disaster victims. Is the additional complex decision points for more for the department or the individual applying for the funds?
Mr. Fisher.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, it's mostly on the division. There are all sorts of eligibility requirements that are in the regulations to pay through this program and statute. So trying to determine what pieces of property, what portions of a home are eligible for repair money, what essential personal property is eligible to be reimbursed for. One of the reasons we can't provide a specific number, it depends on how many disasters are declared, how many survivors are part of that, eligibility of their homes and their personal property that was lost. So it's fairly complex when a disaster is declared for us to figure out how much of grant money through this can be provided.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson?
Yeah, no, and I understand in terms of the funding and mechanism and the indeterminate note. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't making it harder for a person applying for disaster assistance and you create another hurdle for them for a decision point. So I'm okay with the division having a little bit more harder time making that decision than a potential loss of a homeowner.
Any further questions? Any further comments, Mr.?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson, absolutely not. We strive to continue to improve our process to make it easier for the survivors to navigate this program. It's hard enough when they experience a trauma like this. We don't want the paperwork bureaucracy to make it worse for them. So that wouldn't change any of that.
Senator Keel?
Closing comment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Let's open. I'm Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Olson. I do have one more question for the bill sponsor and through the chair to Senator Keel. In line two on page two, it says, an amount not to exceed the greater of $50,000 or one half of the maximum allowed. So if you have a structure that's only worth $40,000, would that be the maximum that they could receive?
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer Senator Merrick, that's correct. The eligibility, there's no pocketing the extra. And as Mr. Fisher talked about, the various federal eligibility criteria, and most of which are echoed, but not exactly in state eligibility. As you heard Ms. Hines say, they get the receipts, they make sure everything's eligible, and they pay everything that's eligible, but they don't pay more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's just a comment. Mr. Fisher, I just want to thank you and your department. And, you know, I've had two floods in my district 2 years in a row. I appreciate your team coming to the village to manually help people process claims, as we had no phones, no internet, no nothing. And then some people just don't have a computer. So thank you.
And on behalf of Gullivan, I want to thank you for the efforts you put by your organization to go ahead and come on out there and relieve some of the issues that were there because it was nasty. If there are no further questions for the bill sponsor or anybody else, we'll go ahead and open for public testimony. Anybody there who wants to testify on Senate Bill 236, grants to disaster victims? Do we have anybody online that wants to go ahead and testify? We'll go ahead and close public testimony since nobody's there. We'll set this bill aside. Want to remind everybody that today is March 12th, which is Ashley Johnson Barday, a little girl that was killed a number of years ago, and we put legislation forward to sponsor that, and that's why a number of us are wearing purple, which is her favorite color today. And today was her birthday. So we remind the majority members, and also at 10 o'clock we have a caucus, and we'll be done at 5 minutes before Until then, we'll go ahead and go on to the next Senate bill, Senate Bill 127, which is the Vehicle Rental Network Tax by Senator Klayman. We heard this bill twice since January, took public testimony. We requested an amendment from the committee members. Amendments have been incorporated into a CS. Is there a motion, Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 127, Finance, Work Order 33-Lima-Sierra-0635, /Romeo, as a working document.
Okay, I will object for discussion. Mr. Ken Alpers will come up and explain the changes. Mr. Alper, identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. For the record, my name is Ken Alper, staff to the Finance Committee. Members, what you have before you is version R, Romeo, for Senate Bill 127. It makes two changes from the prior version, which was known as U Uniform. Change number one, it takes the basic tax section itself, AS 4352020, and bifurcates it, creates a separate tax rate of 8% for passenger vehicle rentals through a network platform, as opposed to the 10% tax that remains in place on traditional rentals of motor vehicles. The second change, Mr. Chairman, is in the uncodified section, and it talks about the authorization of the Department of Revenue to go back into time to look for rentals before the effective date of the bill, and it specifies that they cannot do that, that on platform-type rentals, there is no window to go backwards to try to collect back taxes before the effective date of this. And to contrast that with the original version of the bill that we amended, that gave a six-month window for looking backwards for a past potential tax obligation. And those are the only two changes in the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any questions from members of the committee for the changes to the committee substitute that he just explained? Not? Thank you very much for coming up this morning. I will remove my objection to version R, so we have that before us. Senator Klayman, would you like to come on up and comment on the bill? Does your aide want to come up as well? Please come up. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead and with your comments, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Matt Klayman, Senator for District H West Anchorage, and the committee substitute, we fully support that this represents fairly detailed and complicated negotiations between Turo and the what we call sometimes the brick and mortar rental groups, including Avis here in Alaska, as well as Enterprise. So we support the CS. I think it reflects a pretty detailed negotiation. And Kerrigan Grigsby with Avis is available online if the committee has questions, as is Sean Vick from Turo.
Sure. Any comments by Ms. Dennis? No? Okay. Any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor? Senator Stedman.
No comments, but I have an amendment when the amendments come.
Okay, we'll wait until the appropriate time for the amendment. Mr. Grigsby, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir.
Can you comment on the committee substitute as to whether you support it or don't support it?
As Senator Klayman stated, it's been a long back and forth, and we are in support of the bill as reads today.
Okay. Any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Grigsby? If not, thank you very much for coming on and getting online this morning.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Sean Vink, Associate General Counsel for the Turo Incorporated. Mr. Vink, are you on, sir?
Yes, sir.
Please give us your thoughts and ideas on the committee substitute, and especially if you support it or don't support it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak to you. I just want to echo the other comments that were made. We are in support of the committee substitute. It reflects you know, detailed and lengthy negotiations between the respective parties. And thank Senator Clayman and the other stakeholders for their support and work on this. So happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Vink by members of the committee? If not, thank you very much for coming out this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Do we have any amendments for Senate Bill 127? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one.
Good. I'll object for a explanation of the amendment. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number one deals with the unprecedented geographical dispersion of residents around Alaska, and also takes into consideration look forward to the next couple of years that the coastal communities are going to be facing some tough economic times due to the implosion in the fisheries industry. So what this amendment does, it would suspend the vehicle rental tax from October 1st through March, which is the winter. And it suspends it. Initially, we were trying to do just Alaskans, but we can't do that, so we have to suspend it for everybody. And that's fine. We can do that. But the intent is to recognize that many Alaskans have to travel to the metropolitan areas, and when they do, they have to rent cars or take a bus or hitchhike, I guess, which is not going to work very well. So when you travel to Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau, the metropolitan areas, in the winter, a lot of times you're facing medical appointments. You have to rent a car. You're going to go shopping and equipment and, you know, get some winter storage at some of the bigger stores, or maybe come over to Juneau or Anchorage for Costco or what have you. You're going to visit family members, drop children off at the university, attend gatherings at the Alaska Federation of Natives, normally in Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's a big gathering of citizens from all across the state. We ask people to attend the Conference of Municipal League, and that's moved around the state. People have to come in and rent cars. We want people to come to Juneau in the winter and visit us, and they got to get from the airport downtown. So these are significant costs that the rural Alaskans have to flip the bill for, and I recognize that it would decrease the revenue of the vehicle rental tax by probably around a quarter, but it's not to the point where it's going to turn the economics of the state upside down. So therefore, Mr. Chairman, I put forth amendment number one to exempt the vehicle rental tax from October 1st through March 31st for everybody, because we were unable to just have Alaskans excluded.
Anybody, any members of the committee have questions for the amendment sponsor? Now we'll have his staff, David Scott, comment on the amendment. And just since he's a person from down here in Southeast Alaska, affected by the fishing downturn that was referenced by Senator Stedman, and his community of Ketchikan is significant. Just give us your thoughts and ideas on it, Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Stedman and the Senate Finance Committee. I'm here really to answer questions. If there's any detailed questions on the mechanics of the amendment, Senator Stedman laid out the very well. I know lots of people who travel to Juneau. I know lots of people from not only where I live, but from Prince of Wales, from Ellicottville, from Wrangell, Petersburg. They come here, they go to Anchorage, they go to Fairbanks. It's just trying to make it a little easier for Alaskans in the winter is the intent of the...
Isn't your family or wasn't your family involved in some of the air transportation down out of Ketchikan?
Mr. Chairman, yes, for a long time. My family was involved, but no longer.
Any further questions by members of the committee for either the amendment sponsor or from his trustee aide, Mr. Scott? Senator Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering how this tax will be implemented. Is it just, I guess, in Section 4, so the people that are less than 200 transactions would not pay tax, so this wouldn't touch the normal mom and pop, but more of the large users? Or is there just trying to...
Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Senator Wilson. This, whereas the CS discusses the rate of the vehicle rental tax, the amendment discusses the levy. there will no longer be a levy between October 1 and March 31st.
Senator Snip Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for me personally, I think the issue or the underlying issue of this bill was to try to get some of those used car sales folks within the area to basically that are using their fleet of inventory for car rentals to pay their fair share of their tax that their competitors do. And as long as, I really just want to make sure that we don't hurt those other mom and pop type folks, but that's already protecting the bill. And I think that we would still have an unfair advantage practice for those large entities that are using a tax loophole during the winter months that the other folks will still have to pay.
Scott, you want to comment on his concern?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the tax will not be levied during those winter months. The rate that was just agreed upon in the CS, if it goes forward, is not – that will all be suspended from October 1 through March 31st.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question is the areas where we have significant wintertime tourism. So I think, you can rent cars in Haines in the winter. They don't close up because of all the heliskiers who come in from outside, high-wealth folks. I had folks from the interior tell me that Fairbanks hotels have just about the same census in the wintertime they do in the summer because of international folks who come to see the lights. They're not going to pay any rental car tax?
Mr. Scott.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. Not during October 1 through March 31st if the amendment goes through. I should point out, though, that during those 6 months, that half of the year, of the total vehicle rental tax that comes in, it's roughly a quarter. And the other half of the year, where the big tourism months that we all think of tourism, the cruise ships, summertime, that is 75% of the vehicle rental tax.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another way to think of that is it's an economic stimulus to attract people here in the winter. Or added economic base when we need it most.
Bob, Senator Keel?
But just, I guess, a question about the budgetary implications then. I know we have a lot of support for the underlying bill from state parks folks because about half of the parks budget, vehicle rental tax. Is there a plan to replace that if we reduce the vehicle rental tax by about a quarter?
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, when there's revenue shortfalls anywhere in the state, it falls to the general fund. Also, the vehicle rental, the parks, that's just a fund source selection when we do the budgets. We don't have dedicated taxes. So we target those, footnote it as a revenue source, but in all practical realities, all that money is fungible and can go anywhere in the general.
Senator Keel.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. It's a good conversation. I guess my general thought as we've worked at this table is that the state could use additional revenue sources rather than fewer. And I'm going to be just a tiny bit parochial here. The other way we fund state parks, one of the other ways is off receipts. And the biggest chunk of that is commercial users. Half the commercial users of parks who pay in, pay in catch can. And most of the rest comes out of the rest of Southeast. So we got another situation where we've got one region of the state that is footing the bill. And so if we further dilute our rental tax, we're just effectively shifting burden again. So, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the intent of the amendment. I don't think I can support it.
Any further questions of my members of the committee? Senator Stedman.
Just a clarification. Maybe someone could remind us what the vehicle rental tax collection is today versus what the collection would be under this bill with the proposed amendment adopted.
You want the Department of Revenue to go ahead and comment on it? That's what we have coming up next. I'd like to invite the Department of Revenue to go ahead and comment on the amendment. Mr. Fidel. Lamani, Deputy Commissioner, are you on, sir?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am on.
Do you remember the question, Mr. Lamani?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I do. So we haven't had an opportunity to closely look at the amendment as this just got introduced. But what we can speak to is pertaining to the revenue that's currently being collected from the vehicle rental tax collectively for the year, and also based on the projections of the fall forecast. So currently, the baseline vehicle rental tax it's about ranges from about $15.1 million for fiscal year 24 to $18.9 million for fiscal year 33. And so assuming a status quo where we have the collections between April through September, the revenue to the state for it generated, it's about $11.2 million. And it ranges to 14 for the same time frame, FY24 through 23. Looking at the revenue impact by suspending part of a year for the vehicle rental tax collection between October and March for fiscal year 24, it would have a negative $3.9 million impact, and it would range to negative $4.9 million for fiscal year 33.
So, Mr. Lamont, if I'm hearing you correctly, we're going to be losing money on this piece of legislation if this amendment goes through?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. The other part, too, that from the Department of Revenue standpoint is having a seasonal tax. It's going to have some administrative burden in terms of staffing levels, coupled with being able to audit the program and have just to make the changes within our current parameters and processes to be able to administer a seasonal tax. More so, we understand the intent of the amendment. Similar to what Senator Keel had talked about, we believe that there's an uptick in several of the regions within the state where we're seeing tourism activity nearly double, especially in the interior Fairbanks area. And so if the intent of this legislation is to, or amendment to alleviate the tax burden within in-state use, we believe that's going to be minimal. We still believe that the proportionate share of that comes from tourism outside of the state.
Senator Stedman.
You don't lose revenue that you never collected. So I have a challenge on that concept. But don't we have in our tax book, little booklet that comes out, report every year, a list of all the taxes around the state? And I don't have it here at my desk, unfortunately. I just look it up to see what the revenue was in the last fiscal year for the vehicle rental tax. There should be a dollar amount stated in that, in the Alaska little tax guide we all get.
Mr. Lamani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Stedman, for fiscal year 23, the total amount was $15.1 million that was actually collected.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
Yes, and just for clarity, then the estimated amount that would be collected under this CS with the adopted amendment would be roughly how much?
Mr. Lamani.
Assuming for fiscal year 23, through the chair, would be $11.3
million. Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
No. Through your projected for FY24.
Mr. Lamani.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I thought you were asking about the actuals that we had collected, which was for fiscal year 23. Looking at it from a forecast standpoint for fiscal year 24, we would be looking at $15.1 million is what we're anticipating in collecting. Assuming the amendment, we would be collecting $11.2
million. Senator Stedman?
I'm confused, because last year, if it was FY23, under the current status quo, no changes, it's $15 million. We adopt this bill, and it's $15 million. Why are we adopting the bill?
Mr. Lamani.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, can you clarify?
Senator Stedman.
Well, my understanding is that we've collected $15 million last fiscal year on this vehicle rental tax. And I thought I heard you say we're going to collect $15 million on this version of the bill, version R. So then why would we adopt a bill if we're going to collect the same amount of revenue?
Mr. Lamani.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we have not contemplated the CS into the projections from the revenue as to what that is going to look like, as there's obviously going to be a difference in the rate. But based on the status quo of what the existing vehicle rental tax is, we are anticipating a $15.1 million for 24. And assuming that you have a suspension within that timeline to where you have April to September, that revenue would be $11.2 million.
Alderman Senator Stedman.
Yeah, can we have a brief at ease, please?
Yes, brief at ease. Any final comments on what's going on with this amendment before we go off, before we adjourn for the morning? Senator Stedman? When we come back this afternoon, we're scheduled for 1:30, assuming we get back in time because of the complicated joint session that's going to be coming on. I'll be asking Senator Klayman to go ahead and comment on the amendment, and then we'll have a vote for the amendment. And this will give us more time to go ahead and digest the amendment for what's going to be happening. With that, we're adjourned at 10:50.